So first I'll describe for you, I'll just remind you sort of in physical terms what it is we had discovered, and then I'll show you that there's some very interesting geometry behind all of that. Okay, so so here is Alice's space. So, and Alice is at rest in her space. And here's her clock ticking away, and here's her spatial axis. And she can see things happening in her space at various times according to her watch. Okay, so she can see various events happening. So an event is something that happens at some point in space at some time. So that's an event. So it happened at this location in space at a certain time. And here's another event happening at a different location in space at a different time. Okay, so let's suppose we just put those two events in Alice's space-time. So the first event was over here, and maybe it occurs at this time. So at this location, at this time, is an event. Okay, and then a little bit to the right of that, and a little bit later, is another event. So a bit to the right, and a little bit later in time, is another event. So this event over here. Okay, so for Alice, those two events happen at different locations in space. One of them is here, and one of them is there. Okay, so there's a spatial separation between them, and there's also a time separation between them. Okay. Now, if I have two events happening like that, like this and this, you can imagine that there is someone walking in Alice's space, drifting through her space at a constant velocity, such that those two events happen at the same location for that person. Okay, so this person is drifting at a speed such that when this event happens, he crosses that location. And then he drifts across, and then this event happens, and he crosses that location. Okay, so for Bob's point of view, the first event happens right here at his microphone, and the second event happens right here at the same location. Okay, so it's always possible then to find a Bob. If you've got two events like this, it's always possible to find a Bob that will connect those two events. Okay, so here is the Bob. The Bob is just this one here. Okay, so for Bob, these two events happen right on his world line, right at his location, at two different times. So this event happens first. He's watching his clock tick, 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 tick. Then the second event happens. Okay, and during so the space between those two events, during that time, his clock is ticking away. Okay, and what we had discovered is this sort of thing. We had a triangle like this, and we had. Suppose that between those two events, a certain amount of time elapses for Alice. She says, oh, an amount delta TA elapses for me. So since we're plotting C, speed of light times TA, the length of this side in meters will be C delta TA. And Alice says, well, the separation in space, the separation in distance between those two events is this distance here, delta XA. And for Bob, the amount of time elapsed for him will be delta TB. It'll be different from delta TA. Okay, and we're plotting C times TB, so it'll be C times delta TB. Okay? So that's sort of the physical picture. If we have these two events, we can always connect them, provided that the events happen far enough apart in time such that a light signal could go from one to the other. Then it's always possible to find a Bob that will connect those two events. For whom those events happen at the same location. Okay, and then the time elapsed for Bob, we discover there's a time dilation. So if this is 10 seconds for Alice, this might be less. This might be 9 or 8 or 7 seconds for Bob. Okay, and to figure that out, what do I put here? How is delta TB related to delta TA? Not K. K is in this situation. So K is, if I have CT here, it'll be K times CT. Okay, so if I have a 45 here, what we've got here is a 90. And we've got this 90 here. So we're taking this total distance here, this one. So this time is related to this time by a K, but this time is related to this time by what? Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, square root of 1 over C squared.
Okay, so if we have a right triangle like this, then on this hypotenuse, the time elapsed on the hypotenuse is related to the time on the opposite side here by this factor, square root of 1 minus b squared over c squared. So this is the time dilation factor. So that guy's time dilation, this k is Doppler. And that k is 1 plus the square root of 1 plus v over c over 1 minus v over c. Okay, so they're slightly different. Okay. Well, so what? So that's sort of the physical situation. And we've got the, so that's the physical time for Alice on her clock. That's the physical time for Bob on his clock. Okay, but now, what I claim is that there's some geometry underlying this picture. I've got a triangle there, and I might have some kind of geometry associated with this triangle. So let's try to play around with this formula right here and see if we can discover some geometry lying inside that. Okay, so what we'll do is we will square both sides of that equation first. So the left-hand side is c squared delta tb squared. And when I square the right-hand side, the square root disappears. So I get a 1 minus v squared over c squared times c squared delta ta squared. OK, so what? Well, let's look at this v. What is this v? Velocity is distance over time. What is the distance in this case? Delta xa. That's right. So Bob is drifting across Alice's frame, and he covers this much distance in that much time. Okay, so the distance is delta xa, and the time is delta ta. So distance that Bob moves in Alice's space divided by the time that it takes him to do so in according to Alice's watch. That's what v is. Okay, so let's just plug that inside there. Okay, so what do we get? We get 1 minus, I'm going to go v divided by v squared. I square this and I divide by c squared. Okay, so there's the v squared. And I also have a divide by c squared. And then I still have this, c squared delta ta squared. Okay, so now if I just expand the bracket here, the first term is c squared delta ta squared subtract what? Delta xa squared. Okay, and so that's c squared delta tb squared. Okay. That's a very important relationship. So that's a relationship between the squared lengths of the three sides of that triangle. Remember that because we're plotting speed of light times time, everything is, this is measured in meters and so is this. So space and time are both measured in meters. Everything's measured in meters. This is meters squared equals meters squared minus meters squared. Okay? So there's some relationship between the squared lengths of the sides of that triangle. So let's just simplify that expression. Okay, so let's call the time according to Alice A, the distance according to Alice B, and the time according to Bob C. Everything measured in meters. What is this thing telling me? How do I express this equation in terms of A, B, and C? C squared equals so, does that look right? Not quite right, right? What's that minus sign doing there? Go away, yes. Okay, so let's just do a simple example here. So, for example, suppose this side were 5. So 5 meters according to Alice on her clock, and Bob had drifted a distance 3 meters between those two events. What is that? What is the hypotenuse? 4. Because we go 5 squared is 25 minus 3 squared is 9 is 16. Square root of that is 4. Does that look right? Okay, like it's saying that this side is shorter than that side. How could that possibly be? Yeah.
I think it's because on the high, if you compare the 4 and the 5, like the distance between 1 second and 2 second, the 4 is much longer than the 5, so that's why you add them up, you get 4, and then with the 5, then you add them up, you get 5. Because it's time dilated.
Yeah, so it's time dilated, that's right. So the fact that this is shorter than this is precisely because of the time dilation. So we know that if 5 seconds elapses for Alice, then because Bob is moving relative to Alice, Alice will look at Bob's clock and see that less time has elapsed, so time is running slow. So this hypotenuse has to be slower than this based on just the physics. Okay, but mathematically, we're not used to that kind of situation. Yeah?
Can you imagine if this is on the plane, that somehow will have some estrogen shape?
Yeah, so that's a great idea. So the suggestion is that maybe there is some kind of geometry here, except it's not just geometry on a flat plane. Like, for example, you know, suppose I have a sphere like this, and I have 3 points on this sphere. When I connect these 3 points, I'd like to connect them with straight lines. Well, of course, it's a sphere, so from the outside, I can't really connect them with straight lines. They have the curve. They have to have the curvature of the sphere, at least. Right? But so straight line might be the shortest distance. What's the shortest distance between 2 points on the Earth, on a globe? A geodesic. Right? So that's the path that a plane takes. Okay? So that path might look something like this. And let's put these guys down on the equator. So here's the equator. Going around. So the equator is an example of a geodesic section of the equator. And so the triangle might look like that. Okay, so if I draw a triangle on a closed surface, on a flat surface, the sum of the interior angles is what? 180. What do the sum of the interior angles look like here? Bigger than 180, right? So let me actually draw a nicer one that's really obvious. Let's take the top point to be the North Pole, and 2 points on the equator. And these sides are just lines of longitude. And this is a latitude of the equator. What is this angle?
90.
What is this one? 90. Okay, so we've already got 180 here, plus this. Okay, so if you draw a triangle on a curved surface, you will find that, yeah, there is a geometry. It's still a geometrical thing, but it's not the usual laws of geometry. In this case, the sum of the angles is bigger than 180. So this is a similar sort of thing going on. We have a triangle. There is a geometry. Okay? We have some kind of a relation like this, which looks like Pythagoras, but it's not quite the same as Pythagoras. It's not Euclidean geometry. It's a different kind of geometry. So it turns out that that this kind of geometry is still flat, but in a weird sort of way. Okay? So this kind of geometry is called Minkowskian geometry. So if we had c squared equals a squared plus b squared, that would be Euclidean geometry. But we have, so this is in a two-dimensional space. In a two-dimensional space-time, one space, one time, it's c squared is a squared minus b squared. Okay, and just a tiny bit of history here. So Einstein had come up with this sort of physical picture of what's going on. He was the first to properly interpret what this, this whole time dilation idea. And then one of his professors, whose name was Minkowski, looked at what Einstein had done and realized that, hey, underlying the physics that Einstein was talking about, there is a geometry. So and so now this geometry is called Minkowskian geometry. Okay, so to distinguish it from Euclidean geometry. Okay, so yeah, right. Okay, so let's look at two examples here of this interesting kind of geometry. Okay, so first we'll look at Euclidean geometry. So we'll take 2 points, call them alpha and beta. These are 2 points in space. points in a two-dimensional space. Okay, so two-dimensional space, what we mean by that is we have a coordinate system. Say this is a flat two-dimensional space, the space of the blackboard, and we put some coordinate system on it, x and y, and let's measure both x and y in meters. And we have two points in this space, say one of them over here, and say one of them over here, alpha and beta. And so someone is taking a trip, say, from here to here. And suppose that they take a, there's many ways to get from alpha to beta. So one way is just to take a straight line path from there to there. Okay, another way is maybe, so maybe Alice takes this path over here. And maybe Bob takes this path instead. He goes up to here, you know, visits someone over here, and then continues his journey up to this point, beta here. Okay? So let's just put in some numbers as an example. Okay, so suppose that the distance here is 3 meters or kilometers or whatever we want to use. And this is 4, and this is 4. So what are these sides? Okay, so we would find these sides by saying, well, this side length is the square root, according to Euclid, the square root of this squared plus this squared. And similarly, I have a right triangle here, so I go square root of 4 squared plus 3 squared is 5. It's 10. Okay, so what we have is for Bob here, it's 10. Whereas for Alice, the distance is only 8. So 10 is greater than 8. Okay, so when we look at that picture, we say, okay, let's measure this in kilometers. Okay, so we got these two points, two cities or whatever, and Alice takes a straight line path, and her odometer reads, 8 kilometers to get there. And then here's Bob. Bob takes a detour like this and then comes back. And his odometer reads 10 when he's done. And so when they get together again, so let's say they both leave with their odometers that read 0, and they take different paths to get from there to there. When they get together again, they compare their odometers and they say, oh, my odometer reads 10. Oh, your odometer reads 8. But it's not like a big deal, right? They just took different paths, right? Okay? So that's easy. Let's take an exactly analogous situation, but in Minkowskian geometry, space-time. Okay, so now what we do is we have a space axis. And we have a time axis, actually c times t. And maybe this is space and time according to Alice. Okay, so now we have a situation like this. We'll pick two points in this space-time. So this is alpha. Okay, so this is these are points in space and time. So maybe the point in space here we're talking about is Earth. And the point in time is now. So this is Earth now. And the point beta, you see it's the same point in space, so it's the same point on the Earth. So this is beta. Same point in space, but it's later in time. So it's Earth then. Okay, so we've got two events. The first event is here and now, this event, and then we wait a while. The second event is this event, which is the same place but a later time. Okay, so Earth now, Earth then. Okay, and there are lots of ways to get from Earth now to Earth then. One is to go like this. Here's Earth now. And here's Earth then. So one is just do nothing, just stand there. Okay, so this might be Alice's path, just standing there. Okay, she doesn't move in her space, she just moves in time. But now there's another way to get from here now to here then. I go here now, and then I run over here, then I run back. I'm still here, but later. Okay? So that's this path. Okay, I run over there, some distance away, and then I run back. Okay, so let's see. We've got two right triangles there, and let's just put some numbers on here. Let's measure both of these in meters. We're more used to meters here. Okay, and so we say, suppose this is 5, and this is 5, and so this is Alice's path between alpha and beta, and that's Bob's path between alpha and beta. And suppose that he ran to a distance of 3 meters and then runs back. So that's 3. Okay, so what are the lengths of these sides? Okay, so we use this Minkowskian idea. We take the square of this side is the square of this side minus the square of that side, and then we square root. So 25 minus 9 is 16, root of that is 4, and this is also 4. Okay, so we see, for Bob, the total time elapsed is 8, whereas for Alice, it's 5 plus 5 is 10. Okay, so if we compare these situations, first of all, they're identical in the following respect. They're identical in that basically Alice, in going from alpha to beta, she is measuring her time. Okay, so rather than using an odometer, so in this picture over here, Alice and Bob have an odometer in their car, and that thing rolls and rolls and rolls. As they're covering distance in space, that odometer rolls away and reads out how much distance they've covered in space. Okay, instead of an odometer here, in this picture you have a clock. Okay, so Alice has her watch, and her watch rolls around and around and around and measures her distance in space-time. Okay, it measures the elapsed time here from there, and that's 10. Okay, and Bob does the same thing. Bob's got his clock. As he's walking over here, his clock is rolling like this, just like an odometer. His clock rolls all the way back, and then when he gets back, he looks and he finds, oh, my clock reads only 8 compared to your clock, Alice, which reads 10. Okay, so they're exactly the same. And one way to sort of say this is basically a chronometer, which is an old-fashioned word for a clock, is a space-time odometer. Okay, so what your watch does, as you're walking around all day, your watch is like clicking away, tick, 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 tick. What your clock is doing is it is measuring the distance that you cover in space-time. Okay, so another example is, say, this. So suppose that you stay in the room here, okay, and so here's your space-time odometer. There's your clock just ticking away. And then I go away, and I walk around the building, and I do all kinds of stuff, and then I come back. So while I'm walking around, I'm covering some distance in space-time using this Minkowskian geometry rather than this usual Euclidean geometry. Okay, but the distance that I cover it's exactly the same thing. So my clock is recording the actual physical distance, the geometrical distance in space-time along that path. Okay, so that's all that time is. That's exactly what time is. Okay. So if we look at this, if we look at, say, the famous twins paradox. Okay, so the twins paradox, that's exactly what this is, right? So what we're doing is we're saying, say, here is Earth now and here is Earth later. And suppose that there's a planet here, you know, far away. This is the world line of the Earth. This is the world line of the planet. It remains some fixed distance away from the Earth. And say it's 3 light years away from the Earth. Okay, and then so Bob takes a trip over to that planet, and then he comes back like this. Okay, and so we say, suppose it's 5. So Alice says, oh, look, it took Bob 5 years to get from here to that planet, and then 5 years to get back. Okay, so 5 years, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So a total of 10 years has elapsed for Alice. But for Bob, there's this time dilation happening here. Okay, so it's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So a total of 8 for Bob compared to 10. Okay. So there's nothing mysterious about that. Are you okay with that? Does that make sense? Well, the Earth's what?
Moving too.
So, okay, so here we've taken the point of view that Alice is at rest, so her world line is vertical, and there's Bob, yeah, moving away and then coming back. But now we could try to take the point of view that Bob is at rest, so why can't we take the point of view that Bob is at rest? So Bob is in his spaceship, he's at rest in his spaceship, he sees Alice drift away, he gets to the planet, he turns around, he sees Alice come toward him. So why can't we just take the point of view that Bob is at rest and it's Alice who's moving? And then why wouldn't it be just the reverse? Why wouldn't it be only 8 years for Alice and 10 years for Bob? Do you see a problem with that?
No, because when Alice is coming back to Bob, and that with Bob's point of view being stationary,
yeah,
then she's gonna have to make a steeper angle than the angle that Bob's taking in this diagram. So it's gonna come out the same thing. Or rather, no, not a steeper angle.
Well, let's try to do it, okay? So how are we going to do this? So Bob is at rest, like this. The point of view that Bob is at rest. And then what does he see? He sees Alice going away in the other direction. And then still Bob at rest, we see Alice coming back like this. Okay? So this would be the reverse picture, and we would say, oh, well, okay, so it's only 4 and 4 for Alice, so a total of 8 for Alice. But then it'll be 10 for Bob, and it's the reverse. So why can't I just do this? If I've got that, why can't I just do that? Yeah.
Well, it's because you're assuming that in order for Bob to go from there to there, but in reality, he has to accelerate his way to reverse his direction, and then therefore the special relativity works a bit differently, and therefore you can't do that.
Okay. I agree. Yeah, absolutely. So there are two reasons why we can't do this. One of them is physical. Okay, so in this picture, this is a straight line. Okay, and so it means that there's no acceleration, moving at a constant velocity, in this case, 0. Okay, and this is also constant velocity, but when we get to here, it's actually there's some acceleration. Bob, the line bends here. Okay, so Bob has to change his velocity from moving to the right to moving to the left. So he has to slow down, stop, turn around, and pick up speed again. So he has to accelerate. Okay, so at this point over here, Alice feels absolutely nothing. Right? It's just, you know, the usual day, right? Here, Bob, he spends his whole day like super braking, and then super accelerating back. Okay, so he's well aware that something is happening here, even though all his windows are closed and everything, right? Okay, so there's something physically different about that. So we can't simply do this to this. These are not equivalent, because it's in this picture that Alice is accelerating and Bob is not. Okay, so there's physical acceleration. And secondly, geometrically, this is not the same figure. Right? This is a straight line, and what we've done is we've gone ink and we've bent it, and then we took this bent line and we went ink and we straightened it. This is not the same picture geometrically, right? Okay, so we can't just bend lines or straighten them out again. Yeah.
Younger than her, because for him it was like 8 years, but for Bob, Alice is younger than him, so who's younger?
Yeah, so this picture is not valid.
Okay, but
this is the reality. So in this picture here, so this is valid, and this is what actually happens. So Alice's watch, so anyone's watch, what it does is, as you move around in space-time, it records distance that you've covered. Alice covered a distance of 10 years. Bob covered a distance of 8 years.
Okay, but if we take a point of view of Bob
Okay, but we're not allowed to do that. Because these are not the same. So in this point of view here, Bob accelerated. But in this point of view, Bob didn't. And so they're not the same situation.
It's in his shape or something. He doesn't feel anything. And for him, it's like...
But he does feel something. When he approaches the planet, his retro rockets blast to decelerate him. So he definitely feels he's blasted against the wall like this. And then his rocket engines fire again and blast him the other way. So he definitely feels something.
Example,
even though his windows are closed.
For example, if we're in the train or something.
Right.
From our point of view, we are at rest because we are sitting. Yeah, and for us, everything around us.
That's right. Bob is at rest with respect to his spaceship all the time. He looks around. He's never moving in his spaceship. He's locked into his little seat with seatbelts. But he definitely feels that acceleration still.
Yeah, but we can take a perspective that he's at rest and Alice is moving from him away.
But it's different, though, because Alice never feels any acceleration, whereas Bob does.
How would you draw off Bob's world in his reference?
So in his reference frame, so it would be like this. Yeah, so from his point of view, he is at rest.
Wouldn't Alice's be straight diagonal and his be curved even steeper?
Okay, so let's do it this way. So we're going up like this. And then if Bob continues on like this, then Alice is sort of steeper upward like that. Yeah, I'm not sure that you can do it that way. Yeah, so again, it's still, that's right. Again, Alice has an acceleration here. Okay, so they're physically different. They're physically inequivalent. Okay, and geometrically inequivalent.
I think that you can't even bend Alice's line. So if you do it in Bob's point of view, you must somehow make Alice keep a straight line and make Bob's time.
Well, when he accelerates, shouldn't he leave whatever inertial frame of reference he's at, right? So his timeline for that frame of reference would keep going straight, but he'd have to bend that. So if we drew the initial path that he had as a straight line, and then Alice's as a straight line at an angle off of that one, and then at the point where he changes directions, he'd have to leave his straight line. So there would be no more at rest.
Yeah.
It would be that path that he was taking would still be at rest.
Yeah. Another way to think about this, to see that it's physically different, is that so something that has been said a couple of times and we haven't actually derived yet is the idea that in a gravitational field, time moves more quickly up here than it does down here. Okay? So in this picture, we can sort of think of it this way. Bob is drifting along at a constant velocity here. And so he's in his spaceship like this. Okay, and he's facing toward Alice over here, and he's drifting through space this way. Okay, and then when he comes near the planet, he blasts his rocket engines so that he decelerates, comes to rest, and then accelerates again back. Okay, so during the time that he's accelerating, slowing down, and picking up speed in the other direction, what sort of force does he feel? In which direction does he feel the force? In which direction does he feel himself pushed? So in terms of his spaceship, does he feel a force? Does he feel like he's being pushed this way or that way? So it feels like he's being pushed against the back here. So it feels to him as if there's a gravitational field in this direction. Now as far as he's concerned, that gravitational field occurs everywhere in space. He doesn't know. And so, basically, if he were to drop an object here, let it go, it would accelerate that way. Okay? And that would be true for objects anywhere, no matter how far away. So you can think of him way over here near that planet, and Alice way over here on the Earth. Okay? And so from Bob's perspective, he's seeing Alice in a gravitational field a very, very great distance away. Okay? So here I am on the Earth. Time is moving more slowly than it is up here. And, or let me say it the other way. Time is moving at some rate over here. It's moving faster here even faster here, even faster here. Okay, so from Bob's point of view here, he's looking up at Alice and he's saying, wow, her time must be moving really fast. Okay, so during the time that he's accelerating, there's a certain sense in which time is moving very quickly for Alice. And so even though Bob looks back at Alice and says, yeah, your clock is running slow, okay, there's then this acceleration phase in which her clock runs extra fast. And it makes up for the difference so that, in fact, her clock at the end of the day reads 10 instead of something less than 8. Okay? So we will talk a little bit about that tomorrow. But you have, and you also have an exercise on this, which I think you'll have a lot of fun with. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So what you're saying is here's the sun and here's the Earth, and Alice is on the Earth and Bob is way over here traveling to that planet. Alice herself is accelerating because she's in motion around the sun, orbiting around the sun. So that's true. And the effect would be that, as we'll see a bit tomorrow, the effect would be that her time runs a tiny bit slower than it would if she were just floating in empty space, you know, near the sun, at rest with respect to the sun, floating in empty space. Okay, so actually, when we draw a picture like this, what we're imagining is really that Alice is at rest in empty, just floating in empty space, and there are no massive objects around. There's not even the Earth or the sun. Okay, so it's really just someone floating in empty space and someone drifting in some rocket ship over here and then coming back, and everything happens in empty space. Yeah.
The time on your watch is lower. Is that always going to take a shorter path
to space time? Space time? Or is that just like a trade off for time for space?
No, it is. It is always the, not the shortest, it's actually always the longest. Okay, so. If you look at this situation here, in fact, why don't we just do an example here, put in some numbers. Okay, so in fact, let me just say straight lines. So normally, in Euclidean geometry, the shortest distance between two points, or a straight line is the shortest distance between two points. In Minkowskian geometry, a straight line is the longest distance between two points. Okay, and it has to do with that minus sign. Okay, so let's take some examples here. So we start out, same numbers here. So 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, so Alice just stays at rest on the Earth, and Bob takes a trip. But in this case, the trip is to some place really close by, like the moon. Okay, so he takes a trip to the moon, and then he comes back. Okay, so he's got like, you know, 10 days to do it, and so his speed is very small. He's got lots of time to make a trip of small distance, so his speed is very small compared to the speed of light. Okay, so there's going to be very little time dilation. Okay, so if this is 5 days for Alice says, "Yeah, Bob, it took you 5 days to get to the moon." On Bob's watch, it might be like 4.9 days, and then 4.9 here, so it'll be 9.8. So it'll be almost the same. Okay, very little time dilation. Okay, now if we go to in the same 10 days or 10 years or whatever, we go to a more distant object, okay, where we have to travel close to the speed of light. So speed of light is 45 degrees, so we're going slightly less than the speed of light, like that, and then slightly less than the speed of light back. So now, because the distance is so great, we have to cover a really great distance in just 5 years or whatever. We're going nearly the speed of light. There's a great amount of time dilation. So 5 years, so Alice says, yeah, it took you 5 years to get to that distant planet. But because of the huge time dilation on your watch, it might be, say, you know, I don't know, say one or half. Half a year back, so for a total of one. Okay, so Alice would have aged 10 years and Bob would have aged just 1 year. Okay, and then the extreme case is basically moving at the speed of light. Okay, now, massive objects can't move at the speed of light, but photons can. Okay, so here is Alice. She watches a photon travel for 5 years away from her. So she clicks on her flashlight, photon travels out for 5 years. What distance does it cover? 5 light years. Okay, so this is 45, so if that's 5, then that's 5. Okay, and what's the distance here? 0, because we calculate this distance by taking this side squared minus that side squared. So 5 squared minus 5 squared is just 0. Okay, so this distance here, as this line tilts more and more towards 45, this distance gets shorter and shorter and shorter, because what we're doing is we're taking, to get the length of this in space-time, we take this squared minus this squared. As this thing approaches 5, that approaches 0. Okay, and that's the importance of the minus sign. That minus sign, we're going this squared minus this squared. And that minus sign results in this time dilation. This thing getting smaller and smaller and smaller, this distance getting smaller and smaller and smaller as you approach the speed of light. So basically, light rays have zero length, okay, in any space-time. Okay, so if this is, say, our galaxy, and this is the Andromeda galaxy, and a photon gets sent out to the Andromeda galaxy, okay, from our point of view, how long does it take that photon to get there? From our point of view. How long does it take a photon? I click on a flashlight. How long would that photon take to get to Andromeda? So Andromeda is about 2.5 million light years. Okay, so we got 2.5 million years. Okay, but for this photon, the photon gets there like that, instantly, in zero time. Okay, so the photon experiences, so the photon, as it travels, like if you think about cosmic microwave background photons, which came from very early on in the universe, and they've been traveling through empty space for 14 billion years, according to our time, they've seen a lot. but they've seen it all instantly, all together, all at once. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So it's like that for them. Yeah.
Is that a kind of teleport?
It's not a kind of teleport, no. But I wonder if we're going to have time to talk about teleportation.
No.
In fact, yeah, I think we might have. Yeah, we will. Okay, we'll talk about that. Okay, so just one quick thing. Yep.
I was just going to ask, I know nothing can move faster than the speed of light, but if it does, does that mean that it goes backwards in time, since it would be negative?
Not quite. Well, let's look at that. So here's something subluminal. Here's something moving at superluminal speed. So in a sense, well, it's actually not true, because this is now a distance in space, as we'll see shortly. But in order to go backwards in time, in a space-time diagram, what are you doing? Basically, so you're starting forward in time, and to go backwards in time, somehow you got to get like that. You got to be doing that sort of thing. So even though you're going faster than the speed of light here, you're not going backwards in time. But we will talk about this faster than the speed of light and why it's a bit problematic when we talk about relativity of simultaneity. Okay, so just one quick thing. So here's a more realistic picture. In this picture, what we've done is we've had Alice at rest and Bob moving at a constant velocity, and then instantly, so he's moving at, like 4/5 the speed of light to the right, and then in zero time, he's then moving at 4/5 the speed of light in the other direction. Can you imagine what sorts of G forces he might be experiencing during that slight interval there? Okay, so to make this a bit more realistic, we might draw a picture like this. So Bob starts out on the Earth at rest. Okay, so he's in his rocket ship on the launch pad at rest. So his world line is vertical. And then he starts to pick up speed. So what's going to happen to his world line? it's going to curve. Okay, as when he's at zero velocity, it's vertical, and as his velocity picks up, it's going to bend over like this. Okay, so it's going to curve like this. Okay, until so while his world line is curving like this, that means he's accelerating. Okay, the tilt of his world line starts out at zero. It gets more and more tilted as he approaches the speed of light. Okay, so at this point here, so this is accelerate here. Okay, now that he's up to 4/5 the speed of light or whatever, he shuts off his rocket engine and he coasts. Okay, so what's his world line look like? Straight line, so there's no acceleration, straight line. So here he coasts out to the planet, and then he fires his retro rockets and he slows down. So what happens to his world line? Okay, so it used to be 4/5 the speed of light like this. It's going to tilt back to zero. Okay, so to tilt back to zero, the slope changes from 4/5 to the speed of light down to zero. Okay, so here he's decelerating. Okay, now he's at the planet, and he spends a bit of time at that planet. He spends a couple days. What's his world line? Just straight up. Okay, so this is his visit. And he just stands on the planet like this, not moving, looking around for a couple days. And then he gets back in his rocket, and then what? Okay, so he accelerates, so his speed needs to now go from zero up to some velocity back. So it starts tilting over like this. So here he's accelerating back. And then constant velocity, he coasts. And at this point, he sees the Earth coming up at him at 4/5 the speed of light and says, we better apply the brakes. So he fires his retro rockets, and he reduces his speed, and then he's on the Earth. Okay. So this is a more realistic trip. This is a trip that involves acceleration. Okay? But special relativity doesn't have a problem with acceleration. Okay? So from Alice's point of view, here's her clock ticking away, tick, 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 tick. The years go on. And for Bob, what we see is this. When he first starts out, his world line is nearly parallel with Alice's. And so when 1 year lapses for Alice, nearly 1 year lapses for Bob, and so on and so forth. Okay, but when we get to this part over here, where his world line is pretty tilted compared to Alice's, there's a lot of time dilation happening. So when 1 year elapses for Alice, much less than 1 year will elapse for Bob. Okay, so his world line, the ticks of his clock might look something like this. There might be just, say, 1 year between there and there, whereas it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years for Alice. Okay, and then here, when his world line starts tipping back to being vertical, the spacing, the ticks on his clock start going back to match Alice's. So now when he's at rest on that planet, then those, when 1 year elapses for Alice, 1 year elapses for Bob. And then he takes off again, and the tick marks start to spread out again. Here, this might just be 1 year, and that's 5 years for Alice, and then back. Okay? And then to figure out the total elapsed time for Bob, this is, remember, his watch is just like an odometer. We just count up all these tick marks over here. Okay? And we'll find that clearly there are less tick marks than for Alice, and so Bob has aged less. And in general, if we have a curved trajectory like that, to figure out how much time, so here's space according to Alice, here's time according to Alice, times c. Okay? And here's Bob inside some spaceship, which is moving around, moving this way, then that way, and so on in her space. And so what we do is we just divide Bob's world line into a whole bunch of small little straight line segments, and then we make a little triangle at each one of those little, we make a triangle whose hypotenuse is each one of those little segments. Okay, so to figure out the amount of time elapsed for Bob inside his spaceship between that event and that event, when Bob is at this location at this time versus when he's at a further out location at a later time, according to Alice, we just take the square of this minus the square of this square root. And that gives us the amount of time elapsed for Bob during that little segment. Okay, and then we look at the next segment. We draw another right triangle like that. And we say, well, how far did Bob go during that time in Alice's frame? Well, that's that. How much time did it take according to Alice? Well, that's that side. we take that squared minus that squared, and that gives us that distance, and so on. What kind of mathematics do you think we would need to calculate that total time? Calculus, integral calculus. Okay, so if you know calculus, you can do those sorts of calculations. The point here is that special relativity has no trouble with accelerated observers. And it's very important that that's the case, and we will see so tomorrow. We will see an example of a really cool example of accelerated observers and what that means in terms of general relativity. Yeah.
Right. Time goes slow, right? So when one decelerates, time slows. It should balance.
Yeah, so the acceleration is associated with the slowing of time. Yeah.
So deceleration is
No, it's just the magnitude of the acceleration. It doesn't matter the direction. And we will see an example of an accelerated observer tomorrow for whom time is moving more slowly relative to a non-accelerated observer. Yeah.
So, actually, my original question over here.
Sorry,
did you? If we now had a video connection between us and both, we would have evolution, right? And we would also have the time relation.
Yes, we would have both.
Because it would be the same as if others would be looking at Bob's cluster, that which you would see a bit from the past of Bob's loop. You wouldn't see what was happening now in the past.
Right.
But you would also see the timeline.
Yes. So there's actually a great exercise on there that you should look at. So it asks you to draw. So here's your twin paradox like this. Here's your twin going out and coming back and all that. And it asks you to consider sending light signals, Alice sending light signals over to Bob, and vice versa. And how many light signals they receive in a given amount of time, which is related to time dilation and this Doppler shift. Yeah, you'll see all that stuff come up. Yeah, but we can't really talk about that properly until we talk about relativity of simultaneity, which,
During the visit, there's another time passing at the same rate, but would their time not pass at the same rate considering different gravitational fields?
Yes, but just like here, so we use the words Alice is on Earth and Bob thinks it's a planet X. But what we really mean is Alice is in empty space over here, and Bob visits a point of empty space over there. So the entire thing happens in empty space. So as soon as you put matter in there, that matter warps the space and it changes everything. And you need to talk about general relativity. So we're just restricting to special relativity. So we're ignoring the gravitational effects due to the mass of the Earth and the planets. Okay, so I want to get to relativity of simultaneity, because that's really, really cool stuff. Okay, so are we almost out of blackboards? Do I have to actually erase something? Oh, there's one. Okay. So let's talk about synchronizing clocks. Okay, so this is a very important concept, very basic concept. Okay, so suppose that I've got two clocks, and I put one of the clocks over here, and one of the clocks at the other end of the table. Okay, so here are my little clocks. Okay, so I know, high tech, there's one clock. So high tech it doesn't even stand up. Okay, there's one clock, and there's the other clock. How do I synchronize those clocks? Bring them together? Okay, so let's do that. So here's one clock, and just to make it a little bit better, we'll put a clock on it. Okay, so there's our clock. There's one clock. And here's the other clock. Okay, so I brought the two clocks together, and then I make sure they're reading exactly the same time. And then what? Okay, so I'm starting them both at the same time. They're both stopwatches, and I went like this. Click. Now what? So I want to have clocks that are separated, but that are synchronized.
Need more people. Well, if you put them both at either end of the table and end with that on your signal, if you're standing right between them, then they need three.
Okay, so that's right. Okay, so let's But let's just go with this. Suppose, with this for a second, suppose I had these two clocks, and I make sure they both reach zero at the same time. And so I put one down here, and I go over here. Okay, are they synchronized?
No.
Why not?
Because you accelerated. But if you were to walk by and synchronize them as you're walking, so you didn't actually accelerate while you were moving.
All right, so let's do that. So there's one, and here's the other one. I'm moving at a constant velocity. Okay, as soon as we pass by, we zero the clocks. Okay, and then I walk over here, and then...
You drop it and
accelerate. Okay. So there it is. Okay, so is that okay? Okay, so well, let's draw that in a space-time diagram.
Okay, yeah.
So that clock never moved. That clock was at rest the whole time. The other clock was came in like this at a constant velocity. We zeroed both of them, zero, zero. And then it went like this. And then it decelerated. So there's a slight curvature there. And then it was at rest on the table. Okay? So that clock was at rest. So what was it doing? Tick, 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 tick. Okay, this clock over here, during the time that I was walking, even though it was constant velocity, what was happening here? Was time moving at the same rate here for this clock as for this one? So there's time dilation, right? So the spacing between these tick marks is greater. So it's maybe like that. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 seconds elapses here, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, and then there's a little bit of split second here for the deceleration that doesn't really matter. Okay, that's no big deal. So basically, when that clock reads 7, that clock reads 4, and so they're no longer synchronized. Yeah?
You just start them in the middle.
So okay.
You walk the same distance for your clock.
Okay, so we start them all both in the middle like this, side by side, click both stopwatches, and then we have two people who walk in exactly symmetrical fashion and then put them down. Okay, excellent. So we start like this, and we synchronize them both together. And then we accelerate, one goes this way, and then moves at a constant velocity, then decelerates, and it put at rest on the table. And then we have an exactly symmetrical the other side. Yeah, and that'll work. And then they'll be synchronized. Okay, is there another way to do it? Suppose I want to synchronize a clock that's located here and one that's located on Pluto. Yeah.
In the case you just and then you can just
kind of cut like that. Excellent. Okay, so another option is to just say, okay, we've got two clocks that are reading totally random times, but they're identical clocks, and then we know the distance between, so when my clock reads exactly zero, I send a light signal over, and we know that the light goes at 310 centimeters per second, we've pre-measured the distance, and so when this guy gets that signal, this guy says, oh, I should set my clock to zero, except I need to account for the time lag. Maybe it takes 1 second for light to get from there to there, so I set my clock actually to one instead of zero when I receive that signal. Okay, so that's another way to do it. So there are lots of ways to do this. So another way to do it is we just put a light bulb here exactly in the center, and then click it on, and then light goes in either direction, and then as soon as those guys receive the light signal, they zero their clock. Okay, and so that's this kind of a picture, where both clocks remain at rest the whole time, and there's a little flash bulb right in the middle there. So here's an event that happens, bang, like that, and light signals go out at 45 degrees in both directions, and when they receive those light signals, they zero their clocks, and then forevermore, those clocks are in sync, okay, like that. Okay, so there's lots of ways to do this. The way that we're going to actually do it, which will be really convenient for us, it's slightly different. Okay, so what we'll do is this. We'll say, so just let's draw the picture first in space. So the picture in space is something like this. We have Alice, and we have Alice Prime, and what we do is Alice sends a light signal over to Alice Prime, who reflects it back like this. Okay, and what we know is that according to principle P2, we know that the speed of light on the way there and on the way back is the same. Okay, and so let's draw this in a space-time diagram. Okay, so here is Alice, and there's Alice prime, and so you got the 12 there. Okay, so let's see here. So Alice sends a light signal over to Alice prime, who then reflects it back like that. And let's suppose that Alice receives, let's say this is CT. And that's CT A prime. And this is measured in meters. Okay. So let's suppose that, and this is also 45 degrees both ways. Okay, so this is the situation here. So Alice just sends this light signal, it goes to Alice prime, and it comes back, and the total round trip time is 12 on her clock. Can she tell how far away Alice prime is with that information? How far away is Alice prime? How far away is Alice prime?
Someone said 6. Why 6? Who said 6? 6.
Oh, 6, yeah.
Why 6? Because it goes both ways. So we know that this distance is 6. Okay? That's because these are 45 degree triangles. So that's 6. This is 6. And this is 6. 6 and 6 is 12. Okay, so basically, if it takes 12 units of time to go there and back, then it took 6 units of time to go there. And so it's basically 6 units of distance between them. Okay? That's called radar ranging. Okay, that's how you determine distances to objects. Okay, like radar, right? How do you determine where an airplane is? You send out a radio wave. The radio wave goes out, hits the airplane, reflects back. You time how long it takes to get there and back, and you divide by 2, and you determine the distance to the airplane. Okay, it's a lot more convenient than getting out there with a meter stick and laying 1 meter stick next to another one. Right? Okay, so let's look. Can you see how we might be able to use this situation to synchronize the clocks as well as measuring distance? So I'll let you think about this. This is, I just want to write down the word radar ranging here. Okay, and that's how you measure distances also, well, to much more distant objects. Okay, so how are we going to use this for clock synchronization? This event over here, when Alice's clock reads 6, what should Alice prime's clock read? 6. It should also read 6. Okay. So for Alice and Alice prime, who are at rest with respect to each other, they would claim that these two events are simultaneous. If they had, say, a light source in the middle, which sent a light signal to both of them like that, they would find that those two events are simultaneous. Okay, so the way that Alice and Alice prime can use this this procedure here to synchronize their clocks is Alice just sends a light signal out. It hits Alice prime. She reflects it back. She takes the total time. Oh, the total time is 12. She divides that total time by 2, and she says this is 6. So, and then after the experiment is over, after she receives a light signal, she yells out to Alice prime and says, "Hey, when you got that light signal, your clock should have read 6. Okay? And then so Alice prime says, "Oh, my clock read, you know, maybe 10 when I received that signal. So what I do is I move my clock back 4 units." Okay? And then forevermore those clocks are synchronized. Okay? Does that make sense? Are we clear about that? Okay. So one of the things about this is this is a physical process.
Okay, anything that we do in nature, anything that we're always subject to the laws of nature. And so this process of synchronizing the clocks is a physical process. It uses a physical phenomenon, light, and we know something about that physical phenomenon. According to principle P2, whatever light is, it moves at a speed that's independent of the motion of the source. In this case, both sources, both Alice and Alice prime when she reflects it, are at rest. Okay, so it's sort of a trivial thing, but we do know that. Also, it applies, this is the important point, this physical process, according to the principles of special relativity, principles P1 and P2, applies equally well to moving observers, a pair of observers who are moving with respect to Alice and Alice prime. Okay, so suppose we had, say, Bob and Bob prime at two ends of a platform like this, and this platform is moving with some speed v relative to Alice and Alice prime. They can use exactly the same process. Send a light signal. Bob sends a light signal to Bob prime. It comes back. Bob divides that time by two, the total elapsed time by two, and then yells out to Bob prime, says, your clock should have read blah, blah when blah, blah, right? Okay. And the reason we can do that is we have principle P1. Principle P1 tells us that any pair of inertial observers, say, this pair compared to this pair, moving at uniform relative velocity, are equally entitled to consider themselves to be at rest. Okay, and then by principle P2, we know that if you're at rest, the speed is c, independent of the motion of the source. Okay. Yeah.
When it seems the light is just the light of this for Bob for time needs a longer distance than or at least longer time to go there than the one from Bob prime to Bob, because Bob's moving towards Bob, the light that Bob prime has.
That's exactly right. Okay, so let's look at that. So all of this gets interesting now when we take when we look at the Bob and Bob prime clock synchronization experiment or process from the Alice and Alice prime point of view. Okay, so let's do that. Okay, so. But I want you to be convinced that this is valid for Bob and Bob prime to do that. So according to the principles of relativity, so we're trying to understand the nature of the universe based on these principles. And if the things that we predict based on those principles turn out to be true, then we gain some confidence that those principles might actually be a fact of the universe. If they turn out to be wrong, well, then the principles are wrong. So it's very important to understand that these principles are not laws of nature. I mean, they're just guesses, right? I mean, they could be wrong. They're subject to experiment. It's very important. So, but what we do in physics is we guess. We guess some certain principles or some certain equations, and then we try it out. And then we see how far we can get with those. And I should just say, so far, these principles are the most accurately, one of the most accurately measured principles in all of physics. They measure with extreme precision. Okay, so here's our situation then. So we've got Alice and we've got Alice prime, and they're doing clock synchronization procedures and radar ranging, determining their distance and all that kind of stuff. So that's happening here. And we've also got Bob and Bob prime who are moving with some velocity v on their little platform relative to Alice and Alice prime. Okay, but from their point of view, they're equally entitled to consider themselves to be at rest. So let me just sort of sketch something like this. So this is this little dashed line here is basically Bob and Bob prime space, which is moving with that platform. Okay, and this bigger dashed line here is sort of like Alice. We call this AA prime space. Okay, so this whole space of the blackboard is the Alice and Alice prime space for which things are at rest. And here's the Bob and Bob prime space, or sorry, and Bob and Bob prime are moving in the Alice and Alice prime space. But Bob and Bob prime, they're equally entitled to consider themselves to be at rest, and they have their own space. This is the Bob Bob prime space. And Bob and Bob prime and their space, which is moving with them, is moving through the Alice Alice prime space. Okay? Now, in the Bob Bob prime space, if we were inside that space with Bob and Bob prime, those guys are equally entitled to consider themselves to be at rest. All they're doing is they're standing at two ends of a platform, and they apply this clock synchronization routine. And from their point of view, what does it look like? It looks like this. Here's Bob prime. Bob sends a light signal over to Bob prime. Bob prime reflects it back. So Bob sends a light signal over to Bob prime. It gets reflected back. Bob looks at the amount of time, the total amount of time elapsed. And what does he do? Divide by 2. He takes that total time, whatever this is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He divides that by 2, 1, 2, 3.5. And he concludes that this, this event, that point in space-time, is simultaneous with that event. Okay, so simultaneous in the sense of this. Okay, these two events are simultaneous. They're happening, for me, they're happening at the same instant of time. Okay, so when I click them like this, sure, there's I'm at rest with respect to the air, and it takes time for those sound waves to get to my ears that I can hear, but it's obviously equal time. Okay, and I can hear them at the same time, and they're happening simultaneously. Okay, so these two events are then simultaneous. We'll call them, say, P and P prime. Those two events are simultaneous for Bob and Bob prime. Okay, so that's important. They're simultaneous. Okay, so now the interesting question is, so this is all sort of obvious. The interesting question is, what does this experiment look like? What does this procedure look like from the Alice and Alice prime point of view? Okay, Alice and Alice prime see Bob and Bob prime moving through their space. But they can still, and they see their light beams and all that stuff. So they can observe that experiment happening, or that procedure happening. Okay, so let's draw that. Okay, so there's Alice and Alice prime. We're taking the point of view now that Alice and Alice prime are at rest, so their world lines are vertical. They see Bob and Bob prime drifting to the right across their frame. So their world lines, say at this point over here, Bob crosses Alice's world line, and say at this point, Bob prime crosses Alice prime's world line. Okay, so both of them are just drifting to the right with some velocity v, and they do this radar ranging experiment. This clock synchronization experiment. Okay, so what happened to all the clock? So what does it look like? Well, let's see. So this event over here, down here, here is Bob. Bob has emitted a light signal, which travels over to Bob prime. So at this point over here, Bob emits a light signal, traveling towards Bob prime. So the question is, what does that light signal look like from Alice and Alice prime's point of view? How would I draw that light signal? Yeah.
45 degrees.
What?
So this light goes the same and depending on the motion.
That's right. Okay, so this guy's at 45 degrees. Let me try to draw this reasonably carefully. Okay, so this is 45 degrees. By principle P2. Principle P2 says that that the speed of light is independent of the motion of the source of light.
Is Bob moving to the right or left?
Bob is moving to the right, and Bob prime is moving to the right. So
actually, that's right.
So Bob and Bob prime actually start over here, but they're drifting to the right. And so at some point, Bob is coincident with Alice, and Bob prime is coincident with Alice prime, which is what's happening here. Yeah. Okay. So at that instant, as they're crossing as one platform is lined up with the other platform, Bob and Bob Prime start doing this synchronization procedure. Bob sends a signal over to Bob Prime, and that light signal travels at 45 degrees, even though he is a source that is in motion. Right? So Bob is carrying a flashlight. From Alice's point of view, there's a moving source. Bob clicks on that flashlight, but even though the source is in motion, Alice is going to see that light move at the speed of light, which is 45 degrees in her diagram. Okay? And then what happens? Then that light signal hits Bob Prime and gets reflected back. Okay? So at this point here, Bob reflects it back. So I'm going to draw a light signal going back. At what angle do I draw it?
Would Alice see Doppler shift?
Yes, absolutely. So if Bob is using, say, a red light, and, well, it depends. So if Bob, well, suppose that Bob is just a little bit to the left of Alice, then she will see his light signal passing this way, and so the light signal, he's approaching, so the source is approaching, and so she will see the frequency blue shifted. If Bob were just to the right of Alice when he sent it, well, then the light goes that way and she doesn't see the light. Okay, so this guy here is at 45 degrees as well. Again, by principle P2. Remember, we're trying to do everything according to the principles. No, I'm okay. Thanks. Okay, so we got this guy's 45 as well, even though Bob Prime is in motion. Doesn't matter. Okay, so this is also 45. So now what? The tick marks upon on Bob's world line here, measuring the time according to Bob. How would I draw these? Are these evenly spaced or not? They're evenly spaced. There may be time dilation. In fact, there will be. So the tick marks on Alice's world line are close together. The tick marks on Bob's world line are further apart because there's this time dilation. But that's not relevant here. What's relevant is that the spacing is even, whatever it is. Okay. So now what happens? What does Bob do? What's the next step in his clock synchronization procedure? That's right. So he counts the total time, divides it by 2. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Okay, let's suppose there's 10. 10 divided by 2 is 5. So he's got 10 there. He divides that by 2 and he gets 5. So where's the midpoint of this? The midpoint of this is about there. Okay, so that's 5. Okay, so what he concludes is that that's this one here, the event P. And so what he concludes is that this event here, halfway in between, is simultaneous with this event, the event where Bob Prime received that light signal. So he concludes, so Bob and Bob Prime would say that these two events are simultaneous. So for them, if we were to catch up with them and stand in their reference frame at rest with respect to Bob and Bob Prime, those two events are simultaneous this way. Like, we would hear them at the same time if they were, like, snapping finger events. Okay? So, but are they simultaneous for Alice and Alice Prime? So which one occurs first? So here's time according to Alice. Here's 1 second, here's 2 seconds, here's 3 seconds, here's 4 seconds, here's 5 seconds. Oh, P occurs first. Then there's 6 seconds, and then 7 seconds. Oh, P prime occurs. So P occurs at 5 seconds, P prime occurs at 7 seconds. Okay, so for Bob and Bob Prime, those two events are like this. For Alice and Alice Prime, who see Bob and Bob Prime drifting like this, they see this event, then this event. Okay, so that's really, really important, that this idea of simultaneity, when two things are simultaneous, that depends upon the observer. For me, these are simultaneous. If you're moving relative to me, you will see one first, then the other. Yeah?
By the line of principle, you said that independent of the motion of the source, see the light remains constant, right? So then, yep. In our diagram, we have the light signal going up 45 degrees from Bob's line.
Yep.
So then the Alice's world line is vertical, and there's an angle from Alice's world line to Bob's world line because of his time dilation.
Because of his velocity.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's some velocity here.
Exactly. So then, would she, like, by that diagram, it doesn't look like she's perceiving light speed to be at light speed.
Well, she is. Maybe I just drawn the diagram badly. So this is vertical. This is supposed to be at 45. This one's 45.
Oh. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So I mean, when I say 45, I mean relative to the blackboard, relative to the vertical and horizontal of the blackboard. Okay. So that's that. Okay. So actually, this idea that simultaneity might not be relative, may not be absolute, but might be relative, might depend upon the observer, was first suggested by Poincaré, and then a little while later it was Einstein who actually understood it concretely what this means. Okay, so what this means is quite radical. Okay, it's quite beautiful, the consequences of this. All right, so let's look at this just quickly, and then we'll take a break. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Bob's x-axis. Okay, so we know all about Bob's time axis, right? So in these pictures that we're drawing, that's Bob's time axis. That's Bob Prime's time axis. This is the time, according to Bob, these tick marks along those axes, right? So this is CT Bob Prime, and so on and so forth. Okay, so we know all about time axis. But what is his space axis? Here's Alice's time axis, and here's Alice's space axis. Where's Bob's space axis? How do I draw Bob's space axis? Yeah? I see a tilt there. Which direction does it tilt? Like that? Like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. How many are happy with that as Bob's x-axis? Okay, we've got some work to do. Okay, so let's just quickly do this. This is really cool. Okay, where Bob's x-axis lies is not there. Okay, so here is. Let's first of all think physically, practically, the platform that lies between them. Okay, so stretching from Bob to Bob Prime is a platform. They're both standing, they're standing on two ends of a platform. So, and their clocks are synchronized according to our synchronization procedure there. So when Bob's clock reads zero, Bob Prime's clock reads zero. When Bob's clock reads one, et cetera, et cetera. So it looks like this. This is time according to Bob and Bob Prime in their frame. Okay. At t equals 0, how would I draw their platform that lies between them? Just a straight horizontal line. Okay, so this is their platform at t equals 0. Okay, because the platform, I mean, it's just like this, you know. Here's the clock on one end, here's the clock on the other end. When those clocks read 0 at the same time, stretching between them at all points of space between them is points of matter, all the atoms making up that platform. Okay. So what about at t equals 1 second according to Bob and Bob Prime? What does their platform look like? It just looks like that. Okay. And similarly here. So this is a snapshot of their platform at various times. Right. So now let's look at what those platforms look like in this picture here. What do those, so the picture of those platforms at various times in Bob and Bob Prime's frame is just simple. What do those platforms look like? What do those snapshots of platforms look like? According to Alice and Alice Prime, who see Bob and Bob Prime drifting to the right. So that platform is drifting to the right in Alice and Alice Prime's space. How would I draw one of these platforms? Tilt it which way?
Up to the right.
Up to the right? Why?
Well, because for this one example, we've got to do between T and B prime.
Okay, so according to Bob and Bob Prime, that event and that event are simultaneous. Those events for Bob and Bob Prime are like this. The platform between Bob and Bob Prime at that time it stretches just from that event to that event, right? All the little atoms in that platform, the physical atoms, occupy this space here from there to there. Okay, so it's tilted up like that. Okay, so that's a snapshot of the platform at that time. So here is our point P, and here was our point P prime here, and the platform stretches from there to there. Okay, and so at different times, here's at an earlier time, here's at an earlier time, and so on. And here's at a later time. So that's their platform. So you'll notice that their platform has this tilt. What do you think the angle of this tilt is? Suppose that this angle is 10 degrees. Same. Here's a good guess, and it's right. 10 degrees. Okay, so however much Bob's time axis tilts, Bob's space axis, or his platform, tilts the same amount. The point here is this is Bob's x-axis. This is the x-axis according to Bob. This is the time axis according to Bob. Okay, so the picture that emerges here is like this. So here's space and time according to Alice. And here is Bob's world line. Here's Bob's time axis. Okay, it's tilted by some amount. And Bob's space axis is tilted by exactly the same amount, but not relative to Alice's space axis. Okay, so these angles are the same. Call that alpha. Okay, so this is Bob's x-axis, like that. Okay, so this is very similar to what you're familiar with in Euclidean geometry. Okay, so in Euclidean geometry, we have this sort of thing. So suppose that we have a two-dimensional space here, which is the blackboard, Euclidean space, flat space, and Alice comes along and draws a coordinate system on it like this and says, here's my coordinate system. And when I look at points in this in my space, I will say, well, there's a point. The x and the y coordinates of those points, that's the x coordinate, that's the y coordinate. And to get, say, the distance between here and here, what would I do? What would Alice do? If she knew this and this, what would she do? She'd take this squared plus this squared square root would give her that. Okay, but now suppose that Bob comes along and says, well, I don't really like that, those axes. I will draw a different axis. So I will choose my y-axis. So the y-axis according to Bob is this one. Where is his x-axis? Okay, whatever that angle is, maybe that's 10 degrees, we tilt it down the same amount. So this is the x-axis according to Bob. It's saying 10 degrees. Okay. So now, Bob says, well, what are the x and y coordinates of that point? Well, we drop perpendiculars. We drop perpendiculars to the y-axis and the x-axis. And so that distance is the square of this plus the square of that, square root of that distance. Okay, so that's Euclidean geometry. What we see here in Minkowskian geometry is if Bob's time, now we're doing space time, if Bob's time axis is tilted by some angle like this, instead of Bob's x-axis being tilted by the same angle but down, it's tilted up. And the difference between down and up comes from that funny minus sign. Okay, the geometry is different. Okay? And you can also talk about distances here. Alice measures a distance in her space-time between, say, that event and that event. What she does is she draws a triangle like this, and to get the square of that distance, she goes that squared minus that squared, square root gives me that distance. And Bob and Bob prime can do the same thing. Okay? So it's exactly the same sort of thing. Okay, so let's take a break, because I think we are, let's take a break. Let's go to the beach and get something to eat.